Why 12 New Steps for ACOAs, followed by a group discussion led by Tony Allen. Recorded live at the U.S. Journal Training and Changes Magazine-sponsored 7th Annual National Convention on Children of Alcoholics, held February 24th to 27th, 1991, in Orlando, Florida.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thanks for getting up. As I was walking in here with a young lady, I mentioned the fact that at this particular hour of my life, I feel that this hour is just about as important to me and to ACOA as the hour that I first read the laundry list. I look out in the room, and it's about the same amount of people that were in the room when I first read the laundry list. Yesterday, I went into my personal story and my AA and Al-Anon and ACOA experience. And today, what I'm like to discuss is 12 New Steps for Adult Children of Alcoholics, why they were written, who they were written for, and why I feel that the AA steps should be replaced. Needless to say, this subject is not without some controversy. And I have already been faced with that controversy. And if I had listened to controversy at the beginning, ACOA never would have started. Because if you look at the superstructure or the structure of the 12-step movement, Alcoholics Anonymous is truly their parent. And Al-Anon is, in many essences or many areas, the mother. And so along comes a movement, which is the children. And if you look at it, the alcoholic comes into Alcoholics Anonymous. And they get sober. We get sober. I got sober. And I was told that all I had to do was to stay sober. And I had a successful day. And the Al-Anon person comes in. They're told to attend meetings, take the focus off their husband or wife, put the focus on themselves, learn how to detach, and they'd be okay. And this is terrific. And then all of a sudden the ACOA movement starts and these two parents have to look at what they did to the children. And needless to say, it makes them very nervous. As an AA member, I was living in, before I became an alcoholic, recovering alcoholic, I lived in bars. I was never home. So my three children were brought up, and I was never with them. So all of a sudden, I joined Alcoholics Anonymous. I got sober. I went out to help others. I went to a meeting every night. And as my daughter said, I was running around helping strangers. And meanwhile, I had abandoned my family just as much with, through AA as I had in bars. As far as my children were concerned, the only difference was I was now mouthing some slogans that they didn't understand. I was talking about a higher power that I had never heard from me before whenever I happened to stop by at home. So as an ACOA, what I did was I again abandoned my children on an almost deeper level. When I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was presented with 12 steps. And these 12 steps taught me that I had to clean up my act, make amends, admit to God, myself, another human being, the exact nature of my wrongs, and go out and proselytize, go out and present the Alcoholics Anonymous program to others in order to help them. And I believe all of that basically is a wonderful, wonderful tool for recovering alcoholics. I think that basically the AA steps not only are not appropriate for adult children of alcoholics, I believe that the AA steps drive ACOAs crazy. And now I would like to launch into this discussion. I'm very good at, incidentally, telling my own story. I'm not so hot at this. I feel like I'm sort of giving a lecture, and I'm beginning to sound like an authority figure. And authority figures, as I say, scare the hell out of me. So I'm beginning to scare myself. So if I sound too authoritarian, raise your hand and I'll try and stop. So I'd like to, first of all, I'd like to go through these ACOA steps. First of all, in AA, I'll start off with the AA step. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol and our lives had become unmanageable. Well, as a two-year-old or a three-year-old, I really wasn't powerless over alcohol. I mean, I wasn't drinking it. It had no particular effect on me physically, except that the fact that my mother had drank it for the 9 months that I was in the womb, which means I was almost practically, I guess, like, didn't work out to be a total alcohol fetal baby, syndrome baby. Anyway, the step I've offered is we admitted that we were powerless over the effects of living with alcoholism and that our lives had become unmanageable. Now, what are the effects of living with alcoholism? I believe that's the laundry list that I wrote in 78, which I will now read. These are the effects of having lived with alcoholism or a dysfunctional family. We became isolated and afraid of people and authority figures. We became approval seekers and lost our identity in the process. We are frightened by angry people and any personal criticism. We either become alcoholics, marry them or both, or find another compulsive personality such as a workaholic to fulfill our sick abandonment needs. We live life from the viewpoint of victims and are attracted by that weakness in our love and friendship relationships. We have an overdeveloped sense of responsibility, and it is easier for us to be concerned with others rather than ourselves. This enables us not to look too closely at our own faults, etc. We get guilt feelings when we stand up for ourselves instead of giving in to others. We became addicted to excitement. We confuse love and pity and tend to love people we can pity and rescue. We have stuffed our feelings from our traumatic childhoods and have lost the ability to feel or express our feelings because it hurts so much. Denial. We judge ourselves harshly and have a very low sense of self-esteem. We are dependent personalities who are terrified of abandonment and would do anything to hold on to a relationship in order not to experience painful abandonment feelings, which we receive from living with sick people who are never there emotionally for us. Alcoholism is a family disease, and we became para-alcoholics that took on the characteristics of that disease even though we did not pick up the drink. Para-alcoholics are reactors rather than actors. Now, those are the effects. That's my personality profile. That's what happened to me as a victim being brought up in an angry, abusive atmosphere. Sexually abused, overtly, covertly, emotionally abused, verbally abused, physically abused. And that is what happens to people, children brought up in that kind of an atmosphere. Many of us became post-traumatic stress disorder victims, frozen feelings. Frozen feelings are some of the effects of having been brought up in this kind of a home. Anyway, also anger, of course, which is mentioned in here, guilt, shame. But the basic effect of having been brought up in that kind of an atmosphere is fear. I feel that I'm a fear-based person. Just about everything I've ever done has been based on fear. So anyway, I believe I've covered the first step. The second step of Alcoholics Anonymous stated we came to believe that power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. When Bill Wilson was asked what he meant by restored to sanity, he says, if I don't pick up the first drink, I'm restored to sanity. I agree with that. I think that's certainly valid for members of Alcoholics Anonymous. But me as a member of Adult Children of Alcoholics, when I looked at the step, I skipped it. First of all, when I was an AA member, I looked at it and I said, gee, if they take away my insanity, there's no Tony. My whole life, I mean, I was an insane person, and I kind of liked it. You know, I was euphoric, up and down, did crazy things, and seemed to function at a pretty high level financially. I made a lot of money. Anyway, when I, how would I put it? When I helped get the ACOA movement started, one of the members came to me and said that the group had had a discussion, and they asked me to write new steps for ACOA, which I did in 1979. It's either 78 or 79. I wrote 12 Steps for Adult Children of Alcoholics, and some of these are included in these new steps, which I'm offering now. The steps, at that time, I wrote them, and a new member came into the ACOA movement who was a psychiatrist, and what I asked him to do was to edit the steps for me so I could make it a we steps rather than just me. He did, and the steps were in rather psychiatric jargon and did not get too popular. They still use them some places in Brooklyn. I hear some places in California. But anyway, if you look at the second step for an ACOA, we can't believe how great ourselves could restore us to sanity. That's the AA step. Restoration means to be given back something that I once had. If you look that up in the dictionary, that's what it says. And as an ACOA, as a child being brought up in a crazy, alcoholic, abusive family, there was no sanity. So there was nothing for me to be restored to. When I looked at this step from an ACOA basis, what they were saying was that basically I would have to go back to the insanity of my family. That was all I had to be restored to. So the step I'm offering for ACOA is we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could bring us clarity. Clarity means clearness of vision, being able to see clearly. And there was one dictionary I looked up, and it said that it can also mean freedom from guilt and freedom from shame. So it struck me that clarity is a far better condition for me to be restored to than to a sanity that I never experienced as a child. Now, we come to one of the tougher problems, the third step of Alcoholics Anonymous, stated that we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood it. Now, one of the basic problems for me as an ACOA is the trust issue. And I'd like to read something here that I got in a very, very spiritual book. And this has to do with the spiritual beginnings of children who are hopefully all of us on a spiritual path. And this is the statement. Spiritual meanings progress in self-consciousness when the child transfers its ideas of omnipotence from its parents to God. The entire spiritual experience of such a child depends largely on whether fear or love has dominated the parent-child relationship. Now, if that's the case, which I believe it is, in the home I was brought up in, and the homes that you all were brought up in, fear was the dominant feeling in that family. And it was the dominant, compared to love, it was the dominant emotion that most of us were brought up in. That being the case, it means to me that on a feeling level, I cannot go any higher in trusting a higher power than I could trust my parents. On a feeling level. And what were my parents? In my particular case, sometimes they loved me, they seemed to, and sometimes they literally, verbally, or physically hurt me. So I could never depend on my parents to really do anything consistent for me. So if I look at the AA step, what it seems to be doing for me as an ACOA is telling me to turn my will and my life over to the care of my parents as I understood them, on a feeling level. And since my spiritual experience can go no higher in my than the relationship that I had with my parents regarding either fear or love, I'm in somewhat trouble here. So the third step that I'm offering for the ACOA movement is we made a decision to practice self-love and to trust in our higher power. And I'd like to read a little bit about from the step here. Instead of surrendering our lives to the sick parents that reside within us, we choose to put forth our faith in a spiritual power greater than ourselves, however we choose to define it. In my efforts to resolve the difficulties of my life, I recognize that I have to accept myself and learn to nurture myself. I found that I could no longer give myself away to the needs or demands of others. As difficult as it sounds for me, trust, which is probably one of my most difficult issues, has to be basically a growth process. It has to be an ongoing process. Trust for me is not an event. This higher power has to prove itself over and over again to me, almost on a daily basis, that it's guiding me, taking care of me, and that I mean something to it. Otherwise, I need constant reassurance from my higher power. As a victim, which I believe we all are, and as a damaged victim, I need constant reassurance that there is something in the invisible world that loves me. And the process, I believe, of these 12 steps are towards learning how to love myself and how to accept the love of this higher power. I'll go on with that in a minute. The fourth step of Alcoholics Anonymous says that we made a searching and a moral inventory of ourselves. Is that it? We made a searching and moral inventory of ourselves. I feel this moral inventory of ourselves. Thank you. As a fear-based person, it's impossible for me to make a fearless moral inventory of anything. My whole life as a victim has been predicated on fear. Somebody asked me, I was walking down the stairs, as I was coming in the room here, actually, in the book section, how I was feeling. And I said, well, I'm extremely nervous about this talk. I feel as it's probably the most important talk that I've ever made since ACOA started, other than when I read the laundry list for the first time. And I said, but what's the deal? I said, it really is not a heck of a lot more nervous or frightened than I am any morning that I'm getting up, because this has been my experience all my life. Fear has been probably my motivating factor. The last 22 years of sobriety, and the last, since 1977, with the ACOA movement started, the fear has slowly diminished, but it isn't gone from my life. Anyway, the fourth step for adults and alcoholics is we made a searching and blameless inventory of our parents, because in essence we had become them. I've been told that the Adult Children of Alcoholics movement, I was not in it for many years. I remained in anonymity, so I wasn't out going to groups much. But I have heard that it's been said that the ACOA movement has been stuck in blaming parents. That you can go to some meetings and they're blaming their parents, and 3 years later you go back and the same people are blaming the same parents. So that's an area where we've been stuck. In 78 or 9, I think it was, when I first sat down with these steps, I felt that there could be no recovery for me unless I made an inventory of my parents, because I knew on many levels that I had become my parents and my stepmother. I knew that under certain conditions of stress that I would become either my father or my stepmother. And as I said before, that one of the glaring incidences was I was 10 years sober. I walked into a shoe store, and an older man, a very, very nice, kind man, bent down, and he started fitting shoes on my feet. And I found that I was rude, angry, and abusive to this man. And I got up and walked out, and I walked out in the street, and I said, my God, what's that all about? I'm 10 years sober, and I'm abusing a perfect stranger. And it suddenly hit me. My stepmother was always abusive to shoe clerks and cleaning establishment people. Always. And I found that as I would walk into a shoe store or a cleaning establishment, rage would start moving up in my stomach. And I suddenly realized under certain situations I actually became and felt like my stepmother. I took on her actual being. I was sober about a year, and I found myself limping out of a restaurant after I paid the bill. I said, my God, what's that all about? There's nothing wrong with my leg. And I looked back in my life, and I realized that my father always over-tipped in restaurants. He was a real people-pleaser when it came to maitre d's and waiters. And I realized that I had felt that I hadn't tipped enough in that particular restaurant, and so in order that the waiter wouldn't yell at me, I started to limp so he'd feel sorry for me. And I realized I had started doing that when I was around 15 or 16. So as far as I could see, what I was in a restaurant was I became my father. And if I didn't become my father, what I did was I tried to get pity so nobody would hurt me for not becoming like him. So I began to look at my life and I began to realize that actually what I had become was I had become my father. In many instances, I had become my stepmother, and the women that I was seeking out to have affairs with, live with, or marry all looked like and were the mother that had disappeared from my life when I was 2 years old. So I later learned that we become one parent and we marry the other. So basically what I found out was that in order to have any type of forgiveness at all, I had to take a searching and blameless inventory of these parents and these people who had brought me up, see what their positive aspects were and their negative aspects, look at them really from an objective viewpoint, look at some of the patterns of life that they used, look at some of the words that they used, look at some of the biasness they used. My father was Jewish, my mother was Christian, and my father was about as anti-Semitic as you could get. He hated being Jewish, and he didn't like Jews. And he taught me that I should never play with Jews. Above all, I should never marry one. And that basically Jews were socially inferior to Christians, although they were intellectually superior. So in essence, I took on all those characteristics. One of the hardest things for me to do is to basically cut down on anti-Semitism, because I became an anti-Semite just like my father. So it's one of the issues that I have to work on a daily basis. So what does it really mean? Half of me looks at the other half with disgust. It's a wonderful way to be brought up. So in order to forgive myself, I have to take an inventory of my parents and learn how to forgive them. In order to forgive them, I have to learn how to forgive myself. Hopefully, the fourth step of ACOA, this new fourth step, will help the movement go through blame. I do believe the blame of parents is probably the first healing process that ACOAs go through. I have to come in touch with the fact that although my head tries to forgive the abuse that was done to me, my gut, basically, my little child within, is very, very angry and mad at these people. The fifth step, we admit to God, ourselves, and other human beings, the exact nature of our wrongs. That's the AA fifth step. I think that's fine for AA. I believe that as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was a perpetrator. I did wrongs to all kinds of people, including myself. I hurt people, I ran a roughshod over their lives, and even prior to when I picked up a drink, I did wrongs to people. There's no doubt about that. But the 12 steps for AA are fine for perpetrators. Adult Children of Alcoholics, in my belief, is Adult Children of Alcoholics was formed and created by my higher power and your higher power for victims, for little children, for people basically who were victimized, were not perpetrators. So, the fifth step for ACOA is we admit it to our higher power, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our childhood abandonment. Abandonment is the core issue for people like us. That is our basic, that is what we live not to feel or experience. But the strange part about people like us is that that which we are frightened of feeling the most is what we are addicted to finding in our lives. In other words, abandonment is my major issue. It's the feeling I don't want to feel most of all. But what do? I'm addicted to finding abandoning types of relationships. So in order to realize this, in order to go through the process of basically finding nurturing relationships, I have to look at abandonment. And I'd like to read a little bit about what I've written here. Out of a searching and blameless inventory of our parents, we come to see how we reacted, adapted, revolted, resisted, and ultimately abandoned ourselves. When we review the nature of our parents' illness, we come to see how many of their behavior patterns replaced our youthful innocence and spontaneity. We see all the desperate adaptations, all the frightened defenses we built, all of the repression, frustration, and flight. Through these parent-taught mechanisms, we truly abandoned ourselves. All these harmful acquired behavior patterns we adopted are truly our childhood losses. We need to acknowledge them to our higher power, to ourselves, and to another individual so that we can move toward a healthy self. The intent of this step is to help us recognize how we were emotionally abandoned as children and how we abandoned ourselves and became our parents. All right, I'll move on to 6 and 7. 6, we were entirely ready to begin the healing process with the aid of our higher power. And 7, we humbly asked our higher power to help us with our healing process. In this step, we ready ourselves to turn to a power greater than ourselves. No matter how hesitant or uncertain we may be about the wisdom of such a move, we should keep in mind that healing can and does take place in this world and is often propelled by acts of faith and belief. Here we are asked to open ourselves to the healing help of a spiritual force. This is part of the process on the road to trust. 7, we humbly asked our higher power to help us with our healing process. This is a powerful step. It requires both humility and participation. Humility involves becoming aware that we really are not masters of the universe and that in all probability there is a divine order that we can tap into. Humility comes from the word humus, which is really of this earth. And I was told years ago that what I needed to do was to become average in order to become humble. And I believe that's very true. I also feel that I have to go back in life and go back through the feelings that I experienced, the traumatic feelings, in order to find some sort of an authentic self. A prayer I used years ago when I was asked by the AA program to look at so-called character defects and shortcomings. And I learned a prayer for myself, which I think is very applicable also to ACOA. And that prayer was, please God, empty me of me and fill me with thee. Because I don't really know what I'm supposed to be emptied of as an adult child. I have no clue. I don't really know what my rights are, what my wrongs are. All I know is I hurt. I'm frightened of abandonment. I'm feeling pain, anxiety. I live my life with, say, unshed tears. And I'm always on the verge of grief. It's better now. I can't say I'm over all of this. But in truth, this is what I would like to be emptied of. I would like to be emptied of these feelings of shame, guilt, and fear, and terror, uncertainty, the desperate need to be loved in the external world because I'm unable to love myself. These steps were written with the point of view that the goal would be self-love, learning how to nourish, love, care for me, my little child, and basically be open enough then to receive the love of my higher power. Now, the 8th and 9th steps of Alcoholics Anonymous deal with amends. Now, as an AA member and as a perpetrator and somebody who did many wrongs to many people, I needed to make a list of these people, and I needed to make amends to them. In my AA experience, I found that when I wrote down the names of these people was the beginning of the realization that there was a higher power in my life which was actually making itself known to me on a daily basis. By taking a piece of paper and writing down the names of those people I had harmed, and those people I had believed had harmed me, because I found that they were interchangeable, and then become ready to make amends to these people, I found within at least 2 days after having written this list, my higher power started bringing these people into my life in such a way that I could make amends to them. So I found that writing was an incredible tool which actually could create a connection between me and my higher power. That when I wrote things down, all of a sudden, it gave my higher power a chance to become active in my life. So the 8th and 9th steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, the making of amends, was an incredible spiritual experience for me. However, as a member of the Adult Children's Alcoholics Movement, I feel that perpetrators should make amends. Grown-up people who marry perpetrators, such as Al-Anon people, should make amends. Children who have been raped, incested, beaten, victimized, abused, do not have to make amends. Who to? And they certainly don't have to make amends to themselves. So I would like to read a little bit from what I wrote here about the 8 to 9 steps for ACOAs. Eighth step. Incidentally, when I say I wrote, I'm offering these steps to the ACOA movement. Some of these steps came to me from outside sources. Some of them came to me through things I've read. So I'm not claiming authorship of these steps. Two or three of them I am. But I claim authorship of the laundry list. These 12 steps is something that I feel have been given to me over a period of years by a power greater than myself and from a power greater than myself. So anyway, eight, we became willing to open ourselves to receive the unconditional love of our higher power. Nine, we became willing to accept our own unconditional love by understanding that our higher power loves us unconditionally. In our alcoholic homes, we were the victims and our parents were the aggressors. As we internalized our parents, we became our own aggressors, unable to give ourselves anything but self-hate and self-criticism. Now we are willing to let go of the idea of ourselves as either victim or aggressor and open ourselves to the unconditional love of our higher power. As we open up, we are flooded with the warmth and love and acceptance we have denied as children. The infinite source of love is always available to us, waiting only for us to open the gates and let it in. Around 1979 and 1980, I read a book on the kahunas, the medicine men or the wise men of Hawaii. And one of their spiritual practices, they believed that on this level of experience, there's three of us. In other words, there's Tony that you see talking now to you all on this level, and there's you all on your level, and we're all on the same level together. About an inch above our heads was our higher power. And each one of us has an individual higher power, and that higher power is one with God. So my higher power, invisible higher power, is one with God, and your invisible higher power is one with God. And then down around this area in us is our little child. And as I was reading this material, I began to realize that there was really some truth in this. Because every time I got hurt, every time I was abandoned, every time something seemed to go wrong in my life, I would get a pain in here which was unbelievable. And I began to realize that in this particular area of my body seemed to reside a personality all of its own. The Hawaiians teach that in order for me to achieve some sort of spirituality, that I have to love this little child. So what I did at the next ACOA meeting, I described what I just described to you, and I took my arms and I shut my eyes and I started hugging myself and I started saying, I love you, little Tony. I love you, little Tony. I described that to the group and I said, I believe this is probably the major way that I will be able to achieve some sort of self-love. That night I went home to my hotel room. I was living alone in a hotel. And I sat and I hugged myself, I shut my eyes, and I visualized myself as a little child, 2.5 years old, on my father's knee from a picture. And I started hugging myself, and I said, I love you, little Tony, I love you, little Tony, I love you, little Tony. I got to 5, and I started sobbing. And I realized at that time that it was the first time in my life I had ever loved myself. And the Hawaiians teach that in order to love myself, I have to love this little child within me. Now, I don't know whether that was the beginning of the loving of the little child within or what happened, but apparently for me, that's when just about every day of my life, this morning before I came downstairs, I sat upstairs and I hugged myself And I says, I love you, Tony. I love you, little Tony. I love you, Tony. I love you, little Tony. I want to love little me and big me because I figured we both needed it for this hour. And then I prayed and I said, please, God, help me to be your instrument in this talk. I believe that the reason probably I have been brought out of anonymity is basically to present new steps for the ACOA movement. So from my viewpoint, as I say, this is probably one of the most important hours of my life. So anyway, I believe that it's my higher power's job to love me unconditionally. I also believe that this higher power cannot love me unconditionally until I love little Tony unconditionally. And as I love little Tony unconditionally, and I love him to the extent that he starts to become calm and accepting, then my higher power's unconditional love starts flowing through me to him. And then we become a trinity. My higher power, me, and little Tony become merged in love. And as such, then we can be presented basically to home or to the source or to God. That's my personal belief. So my major spiritual job in life is to love this little person within me. 10, we continue to take personal inventory and to love and approve of ourselves. As you can see, each one of these steps basically is on the road to love. I'm very, very good. I have been judge, jury, and executioner over myself all my life. There's no doubt that when this talk's over, I'll go upstairs and say, gee, you stupid son of a gun, you missed saying that. Hopefully, I will find that I won't have to do that. The 10th step, in this daily action step, in this daily action step, we monitor our actions and seek out those opportunities and situations where we can increase our self-esteem and self-love. In other words, look for the positives of what I've done today. We can use these steps to correct our course in the event that we stray from healthy actions and begin reenacting destructive patterns of behavior. If we see ourselves flirting with our contemplating harmful behavior, it's important to recognize that change must come from within. We can ask our higher power for assistance, and we can turn to our group for support as we struggle with those actions that bring with them self-loathing, resentments, and guilt. We need to establish a new vigilance, one that centers on our behavior. This we can do by working this step on a daily basis, examining who we are, what we are doing, this day to grow and change. Now, the 11th step of ACOA is very similar to the 11th step of Alcoholics Anonymous. Instead of saying, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with a higher power of our understanding, Playing only for knowledge of its will for us and the power to carry that out. Instead of him, I made it it. And instead of using the word God, I used the word higher power. I must say I did that because I feel that it is a, I don't believe God's he, she. I believe it's it. And I'd like to say that prayer and meditation have probably been the major step which saved my life. As I said, my first 11 months in Alcoholics Anonymous, my hands were sweating so bad that from fear and terror, I really couldn't shake anybody's hand. My sponsor and I, he took me over to Transcendental Meditation, where I was initiated into the TM discipline. And the first day that I was taught to meditate, I was walking through Central Park in New York, and my left hand had stopped sweating. And I must say, at that particular time, I wondered whether it was the Jewish half of me or the Christian half which had stopped sweating. I saw from this experience that the meditation basically could change me physiologically, that it could change my chemical makeup. I went back for the refresher course 2 or 3 days later, and after that meditation, my right hand had stopped sweating. And I realized that basically meditation was a way of changing me physiologically. And I began to study all kinds of spiritual readings, and I got into Western mysticism, Eastern mysticism. I discovered that Western mysticism basically seems to concentrate on the head. In other words, I see you as the Christ. I love you. I do a lot of mental work in order to try to become one with my higher power. Eastern mysticism, on the other hand, concentrates mostly on the body. Their belief system states that there has to be a physiological transformation. There has to be a physiological change in the body in order to affect a permanent spiritual transformation. In other words, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about God consciousness. And it talks about the overwhelming God consciousness which our early founders received. Bill Wilson had an overwhelming spiritual experience, as did Marty Mann have an overwhelming spiritual experience. Most of us who came after those two people have had what is called basically an educational variety of spiritual awakening. My spiritual awakening has been going on and on and on and on, and I have not had that overwhelming spiritual experience that the founders of AA had. On the other hand, after Bill Wilson had this spiritual awakening, as did Marty Mann, they tried to recapture it over the next 25, 30, 35 years, and never could. In fact, I was at the meeting that Marty Mann spoke, and she said she had just gotten over a 20-year depression. She had just gotten initiated in transcendental meditation. What I'm saying is that I learned that in order to get myself aligned with my higher power, I had to give up caffeine. I had to get rid of smoking 3 to 3.5 packs of cigarettes a day. I had to get off of sugar, which I'm now 5 days off of again. That's been the toughest one for me, is sugar. I find it's a primary addiction. But God is calmness in action. Human beings are excitement in action. And I find that the drugs that I put into my body, basically to create some sort of stress or excitement in me, are those kind of obstacles to spiritual progress. I've learned that prayer is talking to God, meditation is listening to God, and that the highest form of prayer is listening. When my mind stops, God's mind starts. A treatment facility that was working with the indigent, and I ran a 3/4 house for indigent men. And the man who was my superior, how do you like that? Talk about authority figures. The man who was my boss said that he also had been initiated in the same meditation technique I had, transcendental meditation, and he felt that the people that we were working with were the lost souls, those who were coming in, who were living under bridges, those who had had 10, 15 treatments, those who we were getting the cocaine whores, the people with AIDS, and that the only way that he felt that possibly any of them could have some sort of a spiritual experience was almost right after they got clean, which was in a day or two. So what I did was I taught prayer and meditation to these people as soon as they came in. And what we were doing was we were offering the 11th step to the hopeless. And so some of those people are still sober today. So I found that my job seems to be at the moment is that I teach meditation where I am. I'm at a place called Renaissance in Boca Raton. And Thursdays, what I do is from 6 o'clock to 6:30, I teach meditation to the public, and 6:30 to 7:45, I have an ACLA meeting, which I run. And anyway, as I said, prayer is talking to God, meditation is listening. I was in an ashram, which is an Eastern form of the teaching center, which taught meditation. We meditated for hours. I was in ashram. I was in it. There was a man named Ram Dass, and he had an oath of silence. And and this was in the 70s. And at this place, I learned there was Brahmacharya, which was basically we were celibate. And I found that while I was doing all of this and working with things called Kundalini energy, which is an energy which moves up the spine into the head, this is Eastern mysticism, that I was learning all different types of techniques of meditation, everything from breathing, basically, to mantras, and I was fascinated with the subject. And strangely enough, at this time in my life, was about the time that the four young kids who started the ACOA movement asked me to come. And I was going through all these spiritual exercises, going through all the spiritual concentrations. And through, at this period was when I believe the laundry list came through me. So it all seemed to hang together. So anyway, prayer. The deepest form of prayer is listening. And when I listen, I hear the silence. And there was a book once written called The Thunder of Silence. And as I listen to the silence becomes God. Now, for adult children of alcoholics, silence is a very threatening sound. Because the deeper I get into silence, what did silence mean in my household? There was always silence before chaos. So silence for me, in my sick background, puts me back into fear and terror. Because the deeper I get into it, the more I'm waiting for the explosion. The more I'm waiting, basically, for the terror and the horror of my childhood. So meditation for us becomes a deeper experience. It really does. While it's in my mind, I would like to talk, which I had forgotten, a little bit about abandonment again. It is true that abandonment is something that we've all suffered here. It's a horrendous feeling. It is it's a gut-wrenching experience. And it's part of all of our lives. There isn't anybody in this room who has not suffered abandonment at deep, painful levels. I came across a teaching in the East which states that those of us of the human race who have not suffered abandonment at a very deep level cannot make the next level of spiritual awareness. In other words, abandonment is the passport to the next spiritual level. So those of us who have suffered abandonment, I would like to offer the proposition that in actuality, it's a huge spiritual plus. Because it's an emptying out feeling, and nature abhors a vacuum. And as I'm emptied out of humanness, my spirit can start moving into the God-shaped hole, if I allow it to. That hole has always been filled up with people, places, and things for me. And if I can allow myself to feel the feelings, stay empty, it allows this void to be filled up with spirit. And then the process comes, please God, empty me of me and fill me with thee. Somebody once asked, what is the Buddhist void? What does the Buddhist void feel like? And the answer came back, the Buddhist void is emptiness without fear. And that's hopefully what I hope to achieve in this lifetime. Feeling that emptiness and aloneness without the fear. You can hear my voice. That means I'm frightened. So hopefully there'll be a day when I can describe that experience without the fear. Have I covered prayer and meditation? Hopefully. So I move on to 12. The Alcoholics Anonymous 12 step states that we need to go out having had a spiritual experience as the result of these steps. Excuse me, that was the original. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to other alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. That's pretty self-evident. Now that I'm spiritually more sound, I then go out and share this experience with other alcoholics, hopefully to bring them into Alcoholics Anonymous. I think that's wonderful for AA. world true of alcoholics. We have had a spiritual awakening as a result of taking these steps, and we continue to love ourselves and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Self-love and self-acceptance inevitably lead us to feel connected with a larger universe. When we were victims in an alcoholic household, we lost our authentic self to the demands of the disease. Throughout our adult lives, and especially in ACOA, we have been attempting to recover and cherish our authentic, spontaneous self. Through working these steps to the best of our ability and developing a relationship with our higher power, we can gain a wonderful new awareness and an opportunity to truly change. We can find a happiness and contentment beyond anything we could imagine. This does not mean that our life will always be trouble-free, only that we can readily and confidently deal with life problems. There is a solution beyond ourselves. By working the ACOA program daily and admitting we are powerless over the effects of living with alcoholism, we can learn to love ourselves. And when we do, we are free to love others in a new and healthy way. By sharing with each other, we act as a mirror, reflecting our new growth and love. By using this program in all our affairs, we can dispel the old destructive personality that so crippled our enjoyment of life. No longer do we imitate a normal life, now we embrace it. So, it is my personal belief that I'm here basically by the grace of my higher power this morning to present 12 steps for victims, rather than perpetrators. It does not mean that sometime, if I'm new to ACOA, that after having done these steps and worked this program, that it might not be a very positive act on my part to look at the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 steps, which are the same as Codependency Anonymous and the same as Al-Anon, and make amends to people I had harmed. But as children, and that's what we're working on in ACOA, what I need to do is to put the focus on learning how to love me and not to blame and shame myself. Fear is what I am. I'm a fear-based person. ACOA is what I am, and codependency is what I do. And I feel my job, basically, is to help people learn about their personality profile. A very wise man, I think it was 400 BC, said that the way to do was to be. And what I believe the ACOA program and these steps will do is to help us learn how to be, along with the laundry list. In Alcoholics Anonymous, I was taught I had to do before I could be. I had to change my behavior in order to become something different. The ACOA movement is teaching me that I have to learn what I am. In other words, I have to be before I can do. So this morning, I've done my very best to be something, to be someone. And I hope this has been of some help to you. I know it's been some help to me. I know this is being taped. And it's my hope that this tape will get around maybe to the membership and maybe can be of some help. So I thank you very much, and I'd like to have the discussion of today. It's 8:30. I took up a lot of time. Yes, sir. I honestly feel that there should be no music in meditation. I believe that there's different levels of meditation. I believe music, water, is distraction. My personal belief is that what I am trying to do is to hear the still, small voice within me. And I'm trying to go beyond the mental level. So what I use, basically, is I relax my body. I relax my all the way up, and I count backwards from 10 to 0. I inhale, God, exhale, loves me. And as I get calmer and calmer, I then say, please, God, reveal yourself to me now. And I listen to the silence. as long as I can without a thought, even if it is just for 1 or 2 seconds. For those 1 or 2 seconds when my mind stops, I'm truly humble. My mind is not working. And I can then hear the silence. And the silence is God. For me to use anything else, music, water, is very distraction. But the most important part of that meditation is, please God, reveal yourself to me now. And the moment of listening is when I can make the God contact. I'm not saying that whoever else's meditations they're perfect. I mean, I'm not. I'm just giving mine. This is what I use. So I have been taught that anything other